Track 2. Hello and welcome to the news recorded on Wednesday, the 1st of March. I'm Margaret.
I'm Louise.
And I'm Joyce.
And your sound engineers this week are Martin and Helen. And this week we'd like to welcome the following new member, who is Raymond Southall. We hope you will enjoy receiving your discs. And now we'd like to say a big thank you to the listeners who have kindly sent us a donation last week towards the funding of our Talking News and magazine. And they are Kathleen Owen, George Brettel and Joan Simmons. So once again, thank you for your donations, which really count towards the running of the Talking newspaper and magazine. And now Louise will start us off with the news.
The major redevelopment of a rundown former industrial part of Stourbridge is a step closer, with developers set to host an exhibition detailing their ambitious scheme next week. Revelin Developments Limited are in the process of preparing a planning application to build a whopping 255 new homes on derelict land off Old Wharf Road, which sits between Stourbridge Canal and Stourbridge Football and Cricket Clubs. The redevelopment scheme would see a mix of new family and affordable homes, including properties for the elderly, built on a massive 6.5-acre industrial site to the north of the town centre, the majority of which has lain empty for many years. A three-storey, canal-side apartment block features in the plan, along with family houses with prominent open frontages and potentially a new care home, plus new areas of public open and green space, improved access to the canal towpath, and a new pedestrian link from the existing canal bridge. The developers say the majority of the site has now been cleared of all buildings and the scheme will provide much needed family and affordable homes, and the development will bring a vacant and unattractive site back into productive use. Councillor Khurshid Ahmed, Dudley's Cabinet Member for Regeneration, said of this scheme, "We definitely welcome any opportunity for housing because of the shortage of homes, especially any development which brings with it jobs and economic benefits for the area."
West Midlands Ambulance Service had a surge in calls of more than 40% during Storm Doris, it has been revealed. Paramedics were called to dozens of incidents as a result of the raging winds last Thursday, including people who had been hit by debris and trees which had fallen on cars. Sadly, one woman in Wolverhampton also died after being hit by a piece of flying debris. Between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m, the service received 202 calls, compared with 141 the day before, an increase of 43.3%. Although it is not clear exactly how many incidents were directly related to the storm. Over the next hour, 183 calls were made to the service, and a further 181 calls came in between midday and 1 p.m. Bosses described the number of calls at the height of the storm as similar to that on New Year's Day, which this year was the busiest 24 hours for the service on record. A spokesman said, "Storm Doris certainly presented a number of challenging jobs for our staff across the region. We had lots of calls to patients who had been blown over by the force of the wind, as well as those who had been hit by various objects, including a carport roof, a marquee, and a fence panel. Of course, there was also the tragic incident in Wolverhampton, for which our thoughts remain with the patient's family at this sad time." Storm Doris caused major disruption to the roads and public transport across the region. The High Street in West Bromwich had to be closed, and a stretch of the M6 between Junction 12 for Gailey and 13 for Stafford South was partially blocked. Cars were hit by falling branches and damage was reported to several buildings, including the Quality Hotel in Wolverhampton, Springvale Cricket Club and Harry Mitchell Leisure Centre in Smethwick. Tributes continue to be paid to Shining Star Tarney Martin, who was killed by falling debris as she walked past Starbucks in Wolverhampton city centre during Storm Doris. The 29-year-old worked at the University of Wolverhampton and was with colleagues when she was struck by the large piece of wooden roofing which fell from a building. Police are investigating who the Dudley Street building belongs to and whether criminal charges could follow.
Plans are being put in place by Dudley Council to close Stourbridge Tip and move operations to Briley Hill. A report has been discussed by council chiefs on proposals to convert the Lays depot in Briley Hill into the borough's new centralised household waste and recycling centre. During a meeting of Dudley Council's cabinet, proposals to dispose of the current Birmingham Street tip in Stourbridge through the government's One Public Estate programme were approved. Councillor Hilary Bills, Cabinet Member for Environmental Services, said, "At peak times, our civic amenity site in Stourbridge gets very busy and can lead to traffic queuing out of the entrance and onto the busy main road. We are therefore exploring other options such as the Lays depot, which has been identified as a better location for the waste and recycling centre long term, as it has more capacity than the current site. This is also part of a much wider rationale to improve the way we work to bring about savings and be more cost effective." The report also gave details on how improvements could be made to Dudley's Lister Road depot. However, Cradley and Wooler Scouts councillor Richard Boddy said the council's plans were very worrying. The Labour councillor added, "I'm very disappointed. I don't think many of Stourbridge residents are going to agree to any proposal to close the tip."
A rogue builder has been hit with a court bill of almost £4,000 after he took nearly £5,000 from a Briley Hill resident for rendering work but failed to finish the job. Adrian Jones of Chapel Street, Pensnet, pleaded guilty to failing to notify the consumer of statutory cancellation rights and two counts of failing to exercise professional diligence by not completing the work and failing to return monies to the householder when he appeared at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court. The 35-year-old had quoted £5,000 to externally render the house and initially took a £500 deposit, the court was told. After work started in June 2015, he then requested more payments, with five made, totalling £4,740. But he only finished the front of the house, despite having promised to complete the job before the end of July 2015. The property was left with the old rendering removed from the side and rear and scaffolding in place. Jones promised the resident on numerous occasions he would return to complete the job, the court was told, but he didn't and failed to provide a refund. At the end of the hearing on February 9th, Jones, who apologised to the court, was handed a 12-month conditional discharge and ordered to pay £2,500 compensation to the householder and £1,491 in cost to Dudley Council. Councillor Rachel Harris, Dudley's Cabinet Member responsible for trading standards, said, "This prosecution sends out a clear message that we will protect consumers from the activity of rogue traders who flout the law and carry out substandard work. This kind of activity causes a huge amount of distress to the victims who have worked hard and saved to pay for improvements to their home and are then badly let down."
An investigation has been launched amid claims that a six-year-old girl was prescribed four times the correct dosage of medicine at a hospital urgent care centre. Emma Myers from Dudley said the mistake in her daughter's prescription was only spotted when flagged up by a pharmacy worker. She also claims that doctors missed signs of scarlet fever in her daughter, Layla. Instead of diagnosing her as having oral thrush, healthcare bosses have apologised and promised a full investigation. Mrs. Meyer said she was left fuming after a pharmacy worker at Tesco pointed out to her a doctor had prescribed 4 millilitres of niacinamide 4 times a day, rather than the recommended 1 millilitre 4 times a day. The medicine had been prescribed for oral thrush, when another doctor later said that Leila was suffering with scarlet fever, advising her to throw the medicine away. According to the medicine bottle, a child taking more than the recommended dosage can end up with nausea, diarrhea, and stomach problems. Parents of children who take too much are advised to go to a GP or to A&E. The mother of two has lodged a complaint and said she would only use the urgent care centre, which is run by Malling Heath, as a last resort. The 35-year-old took her daughter to the walk-in centre based at Russell's Hall Hospital on Friday the 10th on the advice of experts on the NHS 111 helpline. She was unable to visit her usual GP as it was out of hours. Laura Broster, Director of Communications at the Dudley Clinical Commissioning Group, which funds the service, said, "We are aware of the concerns raised about the care provided to this child at the Dudley Urgent Care Centre, and we are ensuring that the incident is investigated by the provider to give this family a full response. No one from Malling Heath was available for comment."
A jealous dad slashed a man he believed to be a love rival in the head with a Stanley knife, a court heard. Stuart Pugh threw punches at Patrick Farrell before he slashed at him with the blade, opening up a cut at the back of his head. Pugh, who had been following up on threats made via text to his former partner, shouted, "I will kill you." He slashed out with the blade at Mr. Farrell, who had been at the woman's home in Hagley. The 34-year-old of Napier Drive, Tipton, admitted wounding with intent to commit grievous bodily harm against Mr. Farrell on December 21st last year, and sending a threatening text message for the purpose of causing distress and anxiety to his former partner on December the 16th last year. Pugh believed Mr. Farrell had moved in with his former partner at the time of the attack, which was not true. The text message read, "Your and his time will come. I promise you that much." Paul Cook, prosecuting, said Pugh had been in a relationship with his former partner for 8 years, but they had split up in July last year. In September, she informed him she had met someone else. Pugh attended her address where Mr. Farrell had been wrapping Christmas presents. Mr. Farrell heard a knock at the door and believed it was the postman, but when he looked out, he recognised the defendant, whom he had never met before, from a photograph. Pugh shouted, "Get down here!" And when Mr. Farrell opened the door, he grabbed him round the neck and pulled him outside. Mr. Cook said Farrell was trained as a doorman and he resisted, guarding his face and his arms and his hands as the men scuffled against a fence. At one point, Mr. Farrell asked the defendants, "What have I done to you?" Farrell grabbed the defendant in a bear hug as they grappled as Pugh slashed with the blade. Mr. Farrell needed 21 staples in his head and had to be given antibiotics. He was told the wound would leave a permanent scar. Another wound was closed with a further 6 staples. Stephen Copley, defending, said 18 references had been submitted on Pugh's behalf. He described the father of three was a family man who had also taken on the care of his nephew following a series of personal tragedies. Judge Nicholas Cartwright, QC, took into account that Pugh had suffered bereavement which had affected his emotional state. He said, "It's clear you're deeply remorseful for what you did and you have pleaded guilty at the very first opportunity." he sentenced him to 4 years and 8 months in prison.
Furious councillors have slammed controversial West Midlands Ambulance Service plans to remove rapid response vehicles from fire stations in Cridley Heath and Stourbridge. The move comes 6 years after the service closed down ambulance stations in Cridley Heath, Halsowin and Aldbury. Belvale councillor Ian Cooper slams the plans, which the ambulance service says will not adversely affect response times. He said, "We were assured at the time of closures that the ambulance vehicles would be based in this part of the Black Country, and we have been let down. I have spoken to the ambulance service staff and understand they are not happy with these developments." A West Midlands Ambulance Service spokesman said, "The decision to remove the rapid response vehicles from Stourbridge and Halsowin will lead to improvements in patient care as they are replaced by more ambulances. These ambulances will continue to stand by at both Hayden Cross and Stourbridge fire stations, so there will be no change to the speed of the response, just a different type of vehicle. Currently, over 85% of incidents in the two towns are already responded to by ambulances, not response cars. And that number has been increased rapidly as the number of operational staff and staff who are paramedics rises. The Trust is on course to become the first Trust in the country to have a paramedic on every vehicle."
Campaigners put on an impressive show at Dudley's dilapidated Hippodrome Theatre as they breathe new life into the sleeping giant at the weekend. A 15-strong team donned face masks, disposable paper suits, double gloves and hard hats to enter the building, which carries a low risk of asbestos and has stood empty since 2009. There is no power, so they brought their own generator and high-powered lights, which illuminated a tangled mass of cables, ceiling tiles, air conditioning filters, tables, chairs, and other debris. The Black Country Hippodrome Group is spending around 5 hours every Saturday on a massive clean-up operation after the keys to the theatre were passed over to members of Dudley Council days before Christmas. They had already cleared the lobby and are now moving into the auditorium. Their chairman, Dr. Paul Collins, said that while donning his safety gear, it is important to stress that it is not open to the public. Access has to be very carefully controlled. People cannot walk around unaided or unsupervised. The building is not dangerous, but it is not safe either. It is a marvellous construction and wonderful resource for the town, but has been going to complete waste. It seats 1,752 people and would be the 8th largest theatre in the West End of London. The 62-year-old continued, "We are determined to bring it back into use. This is not pie in the sky. Other theatres in the country have been saved, and there is no reason why this one cannot be as well." Campaigners are working with architects on finalising exciting proposals for the building, which include a 3-storey extension. They must raise around £5 million to ensure that all the plans can go ahead and work can begin to reopen the building.
Thieves broke into a Black Country church and dropped a safe off a balcony with the raid labelled disgusting by a religious leader. Christchurch in Coesley was ransacked by thieves during the break-in. Pictures posted online show the aftermath of the break-in, which the Reverend Emma Stanford said felt like it had been violated the church. The crooks made off with a collection of silver items and a safe was thrown over a balcony and opened during the raid. However, Reverend Stanford paid tribute to members of the community for rallying around in support after the shocking incident. A statement posted on the church's Facebook page on Monday morning read, At the moment, it feels like all the glorious memories of this church and the people who belong to it have been violated. How could anyone do such a thing? Disgusting. Reverend Stanford posted another message on the social media site later on in the day, which stated, "Well, what a difficult and horrible day it has been. One which has been filled with sadness and disappointment at what some people can do."
Didley Council has given the green light for a charitable social enterprise to take control of all borough libraries. For the next 5 years, Greenwich Leisure Limited, GLL, will be in charge of an employee-led mutual which will run the 13 libraries, 4 library links and the Archives and Local History Centre in Tipton Road, Dudley. The 140 members of staff who work within the council's libraries and archive services will also be transferred to GLL ahead of the takeover in spring. Although employees will be transferred on their existing terms and conditions, council chiefs have admitted it is too early to say if people's specific duties would change. The council says the mutual will give the services greater freedom to introduce new ways to generate income, which will be reinvested into the services to train staff, update facilities and expand the range of services available. Opening hours will also remain the same for this foreseeable future, and the council hopes to continue working with existing volunteers and friends groups who support the delivery of services and, where possible, increase the number of volunteers. The mutual, which the council will pay GLL $3,988,000 to deliver for the first year, dropping to $3,769,000 a year for the remainder of the contract, which is expected to make financial savings across the border without impacting on day-to-day services. Although the council was unable to share specific examples of how the mutual would generate income at this stage in the procurement process due to commercial sensitivity, ideas include renting space and being commissioned to provide new services that complement existing facilities. Councillor Pete Lowe, leader of the council, said, "Unlike other authorities that are choosing to close their libraries, we are going down the route of mutualising our services to protect them long term."
Hospital services in nearly two-thirds of England could be cut or scaled back, BBC analysis of local plans shows. The proposals are part of a programme to transform the health service and save money across 44 different areas. The BBC found 28 proposals affect hospital care, from full closures to centralising services, such as A&E and stroke care, on fewer sites. National Health Service England argue that patients will receive better care in the community to compensate for the hospital cuts. The proposals also include the creation of super community hubs of GPs, care workers and district nurses, 7-day access to GPs and getting hospital specialists to run clinics in the community. In the Black Country, they are planning to reduce the overall number of major hospitals by 1, although a new hospital is being built. Overall, a third of the 44 plans look to reduce the number of hospitals providing emergency care, while in another third of areas, they have said they will consider moving non-emergency care to fewer sites. The proposals, known as sustainability and transformation plans, have been drawn up as part of NHS England's 5-year strategy to release £22 billion of efficiency saving by 2020. Reviews were set up in early 2016 and consultations on major changes will take place later this year, with the hope that implementation will soon follow after. A £1.8 billion pot set aside this year for funding transformation has been used to shore up NHS trust finances as they struggle to balance their books. A Department of Health spokesman maintained that the extra money being invested in the NHS this Parliament still gave the health service enough funds to change the way it worked.
Weekly bin collections in Wolverhampton will be gone by the end of the year, warned council bosses, as their programme of cash-saving services cuts is stepped up. Wolverhampton's decision-making cabinet has approved the switch to fortnightly bin collections to save almost £3 million by 2020. They also gave the green light to the closure of both the Anchor Lane and Shore Road tips to make way for a new central super tip, expected to be in place in the next 12 to 18 months. Councillor Steve Evans, who oversees the service, said, "It is a very emotive subject, but if the government takes a significant amount of money off our yearly income, changes have to happen. It's not a decision we have taken lightly." He said the council's hand was forced by a reduction of £175 million from central government in recent years. In 2012, Councillor John Reynolds succeeded in winning a £2.5 million grant from the government to help sustain weekly bin collections. "Sadly, that funding has ended," said Councillor Evans. When the option was put to the public as part of a 12-week consultation, which ended last month, the biggest response was the need for bigger bins. In response, the council is setting aside £500,000 to provide 20,240 litre bins, and for the households of seven or more, 2,360 litre bins, which is the anticipated take-up. Paper and plastic recycling collections, already fortnightly, will continue, but the food waste service is to be dropped. A fee of £35 a year will be charged to residents taking up a new 42-week garden waste collection service. Residents who are on benefits will continue to receive the service for free, but those on partial benefits will pay £17.50, or half the annual fee.
A vulnerable, elderly and blind World War II hero was swindled out of his life savings by a Crowley Heath couple who likened themselves to Bonnie and Clyde, a court has heard. It is alleged the pair carried out the well-planned, extremely determined and prolonged abuse of the disabled 93-year-old, who was persuaded to sign a cheque to buy them a £198,000 three-bedroomed home. Mark Jackson, prosecuting, said Veronica Robinson started cleaning for the widower and then, slowly but surely, isolated him from his network of friends and family, he said. She did not behave like a proper carer would have done. It was a role that she took on solely to be in the position to exercise the necessary power, control and influence over him in order to be able to control his financial affairs. Mr. Jackson, said Robinson, assisted by her partner Robert Homer, then systematically abused her position of trust so she could defraud the man out of what amounted to be hundreds of thousands of pounds. Mr. Jackson said Homer may have started in a subsidiary role, but he soon participated in what the prosecution said was a grooming process. The victim, who during his working life was awarded the MBE for his services to industry, had been registered blind and he was suffering from the onset of dementia, Wolverhampton Crown Court was told. He had many friends in the Halsowin area who cared for him and supported him, and when he decided he needed a cleaner, one of his neighbours suggested Robinson, who advertised her services in the local press. Then, after Robinson and Homer became involved with the pensioner, he almost completely isolated from his friends and his relationship with his family became strained. It appeared that he had become convinced he was completely dependent on Robinson, almost to the point of being besotted by her, and he spent thousands of pounds on her, on her son, and on Homer. Mr. Jackson added, they effectively took control of his finances and of his spending, and Robinson, assisted by Homer, set about stripping him of his life savings. Many people who knew the widower became concerned about the situation, and after police were notified, Dudley Trading Standards Department began an investigation. Robinson, aged 61, and 66-year-old Homer, both of High Hayden Road, have pleaded not guilty to fraud. She has further denied a charge of perverting the Court of Justice. The trial continues.
And with that final news item from Louise, we'll now make way for this week's notices. So it's goodbye from Margaret.
Goodbye from Louise.
And goodbye from Joyce.